Shane Rettie is the 2IC for the National Party, but also, as you know, he's got a strong medical background. So obviously talking about COVID issues as well. But also just how vulnerable our Māori and Pacifica communities are, that's glaringly obvious too, with the seven suburbs being asked to get tested, even if there are no symptoms. Shane, thank you for joining us on the show today. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe, darling. Thanks for your introduction. By the way, have you surfed at Raglan? I have.
Have you? No, I'm not a surfy guy, but we are from there, so I'd certainly love going there. It's an amazing place. Listen, what are you reading into our Māori vax rates, Shane?
Work to do. And just we've always said that health resources need to be distributed on need. And clearly the need here now is to lift the Māori vaccination rate. If we want as a country to get to a vaccination rate that will give us options and opportunities for what the way looks forward, that 15 to 16% of the population that are Māori are simply going to need to be vaccinated. That's the reality of it. And so where the need is here at the moment across the whole vaccine platform is for Māori and Pacific peoples to have higher vaccination rates. And so that's where we need to be applying our resources.
Well, you had David Seymour, who got a lot of attention too for his outrageous call to, you know, here's the access code buzz, but of the week gone. But equity is hard to sell for politicians. Why is that so? And how do you think we can sort of get more widespread political support for a strategy that continues to prioritise the needs of our Māori Pacifica communities?
So I don't think it's a hard sell at all if you break it down to a principled basis. And as I said, on that principle of whoever has the greatest need, regardless of their attributes, regardless of their ethnicity and other things, whoever has the greatest need gets the resources, then it turns out for most health metrics, Māori are actually the top of the need tree. And so that's where those resources need to be applied if we believe, like I do, that the need is the most important feature and the most important way we should distribute health resources. So it's actually really simple when you take that approach. I think David's behaviour was disgraceful, calling out and doing what he did. I think it's enough to hold a view and make persuasive arguments for that view. I understand that. That's what happens in a democracy and politics. We need to step further and actually undertook actions to break and destroy a program that was seeking to improve the vaccination rates of Māori, and that's disgraceful.
Is elimination, from your read, Shane, attainable?
Elimination's hard. It was hard in the beginning. It's hard now. Other countries are finding it hard as well. What will happen, there's a spectrum here between elimination, mitigation, suppression, bending the curve, and we're going to need to have a discussion as New Zealand public where, along that spectrum, we're prepared to sit. What is our risk appetite along that spectrum? And for me, I think where we might want to sit is going to be predicated by three things. First of all, it's going to be security of our border. Let's remember, we still don't know where coronavirus Delta came in from. So while we're talking about all the downstream implications, vaccine and so on and so forth, there's still a hole in our border that let Delta come across that we don't know about, first thing. Secondly, our community response. Have we got enough contact testers? Where's saliva testing? Where's rapid antigen testing? All that still needs to be worked on. But then it's probably the third factor that will have a significant bearing on where on the spectrum we could safely sit, and that is the vaccine rate. How many people we can vaccinate, how close we can get to a meaningful herd immunization threshold. And I think those three factors together, and then the public appetite and the public mood, taking those three things into account, will determine where we move on the spectrum from elimination to, as I say, to suppression, mitigation, and bending the curve.
Shane, the MIQ facilities, we know that some of the COVID particles have passed through the air in hallways, etc. So we've got the border issue, but then the MIQ facilities, which are actually five-star hotels, aren't they? They weren't designed to accommodate this role. What would you say of those facilities, and are there any alternatives?
Yeah, it's a valid point. If they were hotels, they were never meant to be infectious disease isolation facilities. And so we've been calling for a while for a purpose-built MIQ facility in Auckland. And this is what other countries have done. And I think initially where it was, oh, look, if it's one outbreak, why go to that expense? It may be a little bit too much. But now we're confronting a reality that may be ones of years where we may get recurring outbreaks. I think the case has become more compelling to look at a purpose-built MIQ facility in Auckland. So I think that's the next step we need to, but that's not even talking about our crazy MIQ allocation situation, the haphazardness that's been with that. This is actually just talking about the facilities and that we need to build a purpose-built MIQ facility.
Do you think the government could benefit from taking a sort of wider viewpoint and a bit more of a cross-party look at the issue? Because it feels at times that they're just talking to the ones who they align with rather than the expertise that might exist on the other side of the house.
Look, sometimes you wonder if it's just the politics of envy. So saliva testing would be a good example. Pre-departure testing is another example. We had to drag this government kicking and screaming to pre-departure testing, and it got to a point where, is it no, just because we suggested it? And then saliva testing, the same. If saliva testing needs to be ubiquitous, is it just because we've suggested it? And the topic that's hot here now is the rapid antigen test, the do-it-yourself 20-minute test for about $10 or $15. My sense is we're going to drag the government kicking and screaming again, and eventually they'll adopt, like other countries, Germany and so on and so forth, they'll adopt the same policies that we've been recommending that other countries have, but we're going to spend an awful long period of time waiting to get there, and it just seems to look like the politics of envy, because we suggested it, it's not a good idea, and that's never going to get us out of this outbreak.
Well, we know that the saliva testing, you know, we're already mobile, we're all ready to go here. Why are we watching a health authority or health ministry sitting on its hands regarding that? Because people are still hoo-ha with getting the thing stuck up their nose, but perhaps less invasive, as you say, the rapid antigens testing or saliva testing might do the job that we need done right now. What's causing the delay?
That's the questions we've been raising. We've been raising saliva testing through end of last year, beginning of this year, and still the government would not move on it. And they used obscure reasons of specificity and sensitivity that's actually not correct in several ways. First of all, any changes, and it's arguable now whether there is any change in specificity and sensitivity between saliva test and a normal PCR, is very, very small and is almost negligible. You could make the case here now. Secondly, the Centre for Disease Control is very clear that there is a place for saliva testing and rapid antigen testing in the sort of environment that we've had here. So it's just unexplainable why the government hasn't moved quicker on saliva testing, and now is the new issue, why they're so slow on rapid antigen testing.
Okay. What's keeping you busy? If you can't sort of get these points across and utilise your medical experience and now political nous, it feels as though, you know, people like yourself are virtually redundant.
So, look, our role is to critique the response and then make it better. And so we'll continue to knock on that door as to here's what we think would make our response better. Here's the arguments. Here's the evidence. Here's the international precedents. We'll keep knocking on the door with suggestions and ideas as to how we can make our response better. And at the end of the day, if we were privileged to government, these are the actions that we would bring in right now. So we'll stand behind what we're putting forward. I think what's worrying me hugely at the moment actually is a related topic, and that is the number of cancelled, delayed and postponed surgeries, particularly for those who have cancer. And I continue to get daily emails from people saying, Shane, I've got stage 3 cancer, stage 4 cancer, and my surgery's being cancelled. And that's just the surgeries. If we add on top of that seeing the specialist, what we call the FSA, the first specialist assessment, and then x-rays, MRIs and CTs to investigate cancer, one of the panelists on the ministry panel who looks at this was telling me that same period for a shorter lockdown last year, there were 180,000 procedures that were delayed. That's a large number of procedures, Dale, and I'm particularly concerned for those with cancer because you don't have the time frame to muck around with cancer. It's got a very different and changing outcome if you're late with cancer. So I'm actually spending a lot of time thinking and working on that now.
Just finally, I mean, we're supposed to be a team of 5 million, except if you're a political opponent, are the government being big fat hypocrites?
I think the government needs to draw on the experience and expertise that we may have, that all other parties may have, and take a broader view and look to form a broader consensus, and if not, come up with a legitimate reason. Why is saliva testing not ubiquitous today? Why are we not rapid antigen testing people in Middlemore and South Auckland today? Give us a valid explanation today and show us the data, show us the figures, show us the evidence. There's just too much smoke and mirrors. And the problem there is that that breeds distrust. And we need a lot of trust in the population if we're looking to move to a meaningful vaccination level.